This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 27th of November 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of November 2015. And this week our editors were Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner, Hilary Nielsen and Linda Vincent. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. And the main headlines this week are child worker fired, schools warned over online targeting by IS, and Christmas toy appeal launch. So we have the story behind the first headline story, Shirley.
Child worker fired. A Hampshire social worker has been sacked after lying in court and doctoring a report to help keep five children from their parents as part of an attempted cover-up. Judge Mark Horton found senior staff at Hampshire County Council distorted an assessment to leave a wholly negative picture of parents involved in a custody battle. The council denies the court was deliberately misled and said it is considering its position over alleged inaccuracies in the judge's criticism. Judge Horton ruled the children, aged between 3 and 16, should remain in foster care, but said they were illegally removed due to the altered report. His damning findings came at the end of a two-year battle at Portsmouth Family Court and resulted in the council winning its bid to keep the children in foster care after the judge said they had suffered neglect by their parents. Judge Horton said team leader Kim Good organised changes to the report and attempted to keep the truth from the court, leading to their illegal removal from the parents. Telling the court that social worker Sarah Walker Smart lied twice on oath, he added, "It is exceptional to find a case in which there has been deliberate and calculated alteration of a report prepared by one social worker in order to make that assessment seem less favourable by another social worker and the team manager. The withholding of the original report when it was ordered to be disclosed and the parties to the alterations lying on oath, one of them twice, in order to try to cover up the existence of the original report." The judge also criticised Miss Good's manager, Lisa Humphreys, for her hollow apology to the parents. The court heard that Miss Good now holds a senior role at Isle of Wight Council, while Miss Humphreys is an assistant director at Lambeth Council. Miss Walker Smart was promoted to team manager at Hampshire. The council would not say when that promotion took place. They also refused to name the social worker who had been sacked. Isle of Wight Council declined to comment on Miss Good, while a Lambeth spokesman would only say the council was aware of the case. Judge Horton said the parents' inability to set consistent boundaries had led to appalling neglect of the older children's educational, emotional and social development and neglect of all of the children's health needs. The younger children were at risk of suffering similar significant harm unless the state intervened, he added. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "This is a very complex case, as evidenced in the findings, involving very serious neglect to vulnerable children. We are very pleased that the outcome of the court case was consistent with the local authority's original application to the court, to safeguard very vulnerable children who were at risk of suffering significant harm as a result of neglect. There are some aspects of the court's criticism that we believe are not quite correct, however, and are considering our position in this regard. We do accept that there were deficiencies in some of the social worker practice in this case, and subsequent action was taken, including the termination of one social worker's employment with the County Council.
Thank you. Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, the headline is Schools Warned Over Online Targeting by IS. A warning has been issued to Hampshire schools over the dangers of using the internet after police mistakenly reported that children have been targeted on social media by members of so-called Islamic State, IS. A Hampshire police officer posted an online alert which stated children at schools in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight had received social media requests from people believed to be IS members. Following further investigation, police later admitted it was probably not IS members contacting children. The force also admitted that only students from one school were targeted, rather than the educational establishments mentioned in the original alert. Police refused to comment on whether an internal investigation had been launched into the incident, but said officers were following up concerns raised by students. Hampshire Police Inspector David Knoll said, "Last week, information was received from students at a Hampshire secondary school that adult male supporters of IS had contacted students via Facebook. Over the weekend, a Hampshire alert message was sent to many schools in order to alert staff and parents of the dangers of internet and social media use, particularly given the recent tragic events in France. Inquiries with the Hampshire students who initially reported this matter have since revealed that the male adults who made contact on Facebook are probably not IS members. However, advice to schools, parents and teachers to be aware of social media and internet dangers still stands." John Apted, chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, which represents the force's rank and file, said the alert was probably from a well-meaning police officer who intended to protect the public, but added that there may be lessons to learn. He said, "The climate at the moment is one of apprehension and fear, and with the terrorism threat level being so high, this is probably done by a well-meaning police officer thinking they are doing the right thing." It comes little more than a week after the deadly attacks in Paris that killed more than 130 people, and the threat of terrorism in the country is currently listed as severe, according to MI5.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is Christmas Toy Appeal Launch. The Hampshire Chronicle is once again calling on its readers to help give a needy child a happy Christmas with the launch of our annual toy appeal. Supporting Home Start, Basics Bank and Friends of the Family, the Chronicle's Christmas Toy Appeal aims to help children of families going through difficult times. We hope to collect new toys for a special Santa delivery to youngsters who may otherwise have little or nothing under the tree this festive season. Liz Stannard, coordinator at Home Start Winchester, was amazed by the generosity of the public last year. She said, "The cause is a great one and makes the appeal more rewarding. Last year we chose the gifts and went round the houses to the families we support. The parents then came to the car, chose the gift they wanted, and we wrapped it then and there. The best bit was seeing the smile on the parents' faces when we came round with our delivery. So please, give what you can this Christmas." Home Start is a charity that aims to offer free support to families with at least one child under five going through difficult times. Richard Jones, lead bookseller at Waterstones, is thrilled to be helping the cause for another year. He said, "It was a big success last year and I'm happy to be involved again. We had so much stuff it overflowed our designated box. They had to get a cage to put everything in because the response was so great." Liz Marsden, the Brooks Shopping Centre Marketing and Communications Manager, said, "The Brooks is delighted to be able to support the Hampshire Chronicle this year in collecting donated children's Christmas gifts for its toy appeal. We choose the three charities because of the great work they did last year and the fact that they're local. We felt choosing local charities over national ones was better because you can really see the important difference they make in Winchester. If you would like to donate a gift for a child, please take it unwrapped to the Waterstone store on the second floor in the Brooks. Only brand new toys are wanted and must be suitable for boys and girls aged from toddlers to 13-year-olds. All donations will be divided between the three chosen charities in time for Christmas. Closing date for all donations is Tuesday, December the 15th. And there's a lovely happy picture of the three people collecting the toys. Liz Stannard holding a soft, fluffy Gruffalo and a little Peter Rabbit. Then there's Richard Jones from Waterstones with all the possible books for the children behind him. And the Brooks's Liz Marden is holding a game of Snakes and Ladders, another possible for the Toy Appeal donations.
And that concludes our headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, Belgarum diary, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Andrews. Shirley Pamela née Broadway Andrews, peacefully aged 80. Barton, Nicholas Turnbull, Nick Barton, at the Countess Mountbatten House, aged 67. Bull, Gwendolyn May née Cutler Bull, late of Chandler's Ford, at the Royal Cornwall Hospital, Trellisk, aged 82. Coombs, Andy Coombs, after a short illness at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Crossley, Gillian Crossley, peacefully but unexpectedly, aged 62. Fremantle, David Clinton Fremantle, peacefully aged 86. Gerard, Brian Victor Gerard, of Gerard Stores Highcliffe, peacefully at home, aged 78. Lynch, Tim Lynch, peacefully after a long struggle with his illness, aged 44. Makewell, Derek Herbert Makewell, aged 90. Noble, Anthony Douglas Noble, peacefully at home, aged 81. Smith, Jean née Williamson Smith, late of Alsford, peacefully aged 95. Stone, Raymond Arthur Stone, peacefully aged 83. And now it's time for Christian comment, read by Shirley.
And this one, it's written by Paul Kennedy, and it's headed, Eschew Hate to Break Cycle of Violence. I will not give you the gift of hate, said Antoine Lery to the terrorists who killed his wife in the Paris attacks. It's an amazing response, spoken in the midst of grief. He's wishing to break the cycle of hate and violence, which the so-called Islamic State, IS, hopes will plunge our society into chaotic fear and deadly revenge. Religious violence has recently been seen in Lebanon and Mali, as well as the bombing of a Russian airliner. And when IS claimed responsibility for the Paris attacks, it referred to the terrorists in Islamic terms as soldiers of the caliphate. Islam is a religion of peace where Allah is referred to as merciful, and the Quran condemns coercion in religion and states that the killing of one person is like the killing of all humankind. However, an element of Islam has been hijacked by violent people, seduced by power and a cult of death. The caliphate which they aim to establish would, in their eyes, be the one legitimate Islamic state. Their interpretation of Islamic law would be enforced by violent coercion and bloody victories, would be seen as divinely inspired. Violence is the currency of such a caliphate. How should we respond? when faced with ghastly attacks, it's easy to be overcome by rage in an almost primitive way, as when toddler schemes. It's not fair, a response which, when dealing with violence and scaled up to the state level, leads to bombs and drones. Rage and fear can combine to breed hate, but as Antoine understood, hate is a gift to any terrorist. If the cycle of violence is not broken, Middle Eastern civilians will be killed by Western bombs dropped from the air, and our states will be seen as being as hateful as IS. There is a Christian response based upon Jesus' behaviour to the violent repressive authority of his day, the Roman Empire. The temptation to respond to violence with violence, to copy the violence done to us by in turn inflicting violence on the oppressor, has to be challenged. The theologian René Girard called this mimetic violence, where we mime or copy the violence done to us by lashing out in retaliation. Jesus also copied the violence done to Israel by the Roman Empire, but not by retaliation. Jesus became the sacrifice, the innocent victim who hung on the cross, and who by his very public and humiliating execution showed the shame of the oppressor and challenged the cycle of violence. The Caliphate is a cult of death, enforced by propaganda, Kalashnikovs and suicide vests. The kingdom, for which Jesus prayed, is built on the death of its king, which breaks the cult of death, if only we can accept it. John Milton, who lived through the English Civil War, another time of religious violence and turmoil, wrote, "They who have put out people's eyes reproach them of their blindness." We can choose to have our eyes metaphorically put out by these barbaric acts and seek violent retribution. In this retribution, we will be reproached. Alternatively, we can, like Antoine or Christ, glimpse the clear light of day amid the horror and choose to break the cycle of violence.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And there are 11 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, John Andrews says, "Let's try shared space in our city. I do hope that our city councillors, and perhaps more importantly our council officers, given their power to influence our elected representatives, take notice of last week's letter in the Chronicle from Chris Higgins. Traffic congestion in Winchester is already a polluting nightmare and will only get worse when the council implements its various development plans, not least the misguided Silver Hill project. If Winchester's pedestrians are to breathe freely in their own town, they, rather than car drivers, must be given priority in council planning. This could mean more encouragement to use park and ride, perhaps, as in Cambridge, by making central car parks punitively expensive. It might also mean more pedestrianised areas on the model of the High Street. But it certainly could certainly mean use of the spared... I'll start that again. But it could certainly mean use of the shared space policy advocated by Ben Hamilton Bailey. This system, in which cars and pedestrians share the road rather than being segregated from each other, has already worked well in London's Exhibition Road, and my wife and I can attest, after a recent holiday in Cordova, Spain, that it could also work in a city of the size of Winchester. The point of the shared space philosophy is not to ban cars outright. Instead, they and pedestrians coexist in a civilised fashion, with drivers automatically giving way to pedestrians who are no longer confined to narrow pavements. There must surely be someone in the council with the imagination to consider a proven concept. John Andrews, Hyde House Gardens, Winchester, and he's accompanied this letter with a close-up of an exhaust pipe spewing out lots of exhaust.
And this letter is from Sue McKenna and is headed Homeless Help. Trinity Winchester provides support and advice to people who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless, Chronicle, November the 19th. We work closely with other homelessness organisations and it's in partnership with Winchester City Council to ensure the best outcomes for our clients with clear pathways tailored to individual circumstances. We are aware of the attractions the City of Winchester has to offer to some individuals who might choose to pursue lifestyle choices, including begging. However, our statistics do not indicate a rise in people using our service who are not genuinely in need. Please don't let this focus on begging overshadow the plight of genuinely homeless people. We would like to take this opportunity to thank the public and all our supporters. And that's from Sue McKenna, General Manager, Trinity Winchester.
And this one is the same sort of subject, entitled Rough Sleepers, and it's from John Craig. I am concerned that the major article on beggars in the Chronicle, November 19th, may detract from local people's concern for the plight of the real homeless in Winchester this Christmas and winter. These not only include rough sleepers, but also those living in the night shelter, hostels, sofa surfing, and those in secure accommodation. Everyone is at risk of becoming homeless. Just a couple of traumatic events in your life, being made redundant, suffering from domestic violence, developing mental health problems, can result in becoming homeless. If people want to help the local homeless this Christmas, they should put money in the Spare Change for Real Change boxes in many shops. And this was from John Craig, a trustee of the Trinity, Winchester, Kingsworthy.
Yes, and Arnold Jarman brings me back to traffic. His heading is Traffic Nightmare. Letters from Peter Collings and others regarding future traffic problems have resulted in an item in your paper saying that transport chiefs dismiss fears. Much help that has been. Please, please will they spare us the meaningless bureaucratic jargon about traffic models, infrastructure projects, resource intensive, suitable data and all that, and tell us this in precise terms. If I, as a future resident of Barton Farm, wish to join all the other drivers who need to get to the M3 at Winnall, which route will these transport chiefs expect me to take? Will there be a need for a review to answer that? Or might someone be big enough to say, sorry, we haven't a clue? Barton Farm is illustrated graphically or ironically on the front page of the property section with neither a car nor a house in sight. Arnold Jarman, Kingsworthy.
And James Anderson writes about global warming. What is it about Cap Global Carbon and others that they ignore the senior authority on climate change, the UN Intergovernmental Panel, IPCC, and substitute their own unfounded theories of runaway climate and economically illiterate solutions, letters November the 19th. The IPCC has no truck with the uptick climate runaways, which are without scientific foundation, and goes on to say that we cannot ignore the importance of fossil fuels, or AR5WG3 for those that are interested. Simply saying no to fossil fuels is not a strategy. The Indian delegate to the Paris conference will insist that lifting millions of his country's people out of poverty comes first. And if coal is to be burnt, then so be it. Hardly the woeful ethics complained of, whatever else. Further east, China is building enough coal-fired power stations each year to power two-thirds of Britain, and would have to triple its nuclear build programmes to substitute. Consequently, in Paris, David Cameron will risk comparison with a sailor taking his easement on the windward side. 2015 may well become the hottest year on record, but only just above 1,000 years ago. No scientific model mimicking the rise in temperature to the medieval warm period, then down to the Little Ice Age, and then back up to today, has been produced as a platform on which to build the forecast. While actual atmospheric radiative forcing is not matching the theory, and science is far from settled. In context, the thermodynamic equilibrium of Earth is predicted to rise from an average 287 degrees Kelvin to 289.7 degrees, or about a 1% change over 100 years. That is either unparalleled accuracy or a classic example of human factors' failings. Probably we have much clue about our future climate. Blind moral panic helps no one. Schemes such as digging up South America for lithium for battery cars are environmentally daft, and we need a much more rounded approach to husbanding Earth's finite resources, regardless of climate change theories. For the moment, that husbandry is being steered into a blind alley by the carbon obsessionistra. James Anderson, South Wanston.
And this one is from Marion Golding regarding cathedral costs. So far, I think the Chronicle has been very balanced and reasonable in the views printed over cathedral charging. However, the contribution headlined Cathedral Crucial from Pamela Johnston, Letters, November 12th, fell over into sheer fantasy. It needs to be made very clear that those that love, attend, support, volunteer, or are obsessive about the cathedral represent just 12% of the population. That official census figure includes those that adhere to the Catholic faith. In other words, these fanatical Christian views are, as others have tried to point out, a tiny Christian cult. Therefore, we, the majority, should not be expected to pander to, or worse, finance such a tiny group. Of course, as we have seen from your print choice, they are very vocal, have friends in high places, seats in the House of Lords, and great wealth of property. But that should not be allowed to blur the truth. Let them think that the cathedral is crucial, by all means, but please don't expect ordinary non-gullible people to have to pay for it. It is a beautiful building. It has great historic and ley line site significance. I love to stroll around it myself, but it is not crucial. Christians do not rule. They are a dwindling band. Don't confuse going to a wedding or a funeral as being held hook, line and sinker into the church. Don't let these people try to tell us that the very fate of the United Kingdom or Winchester depends on the cathedral roof. Marion Golding, Stockbridge.
And here's a thank you letter, which is nice. I'm afraid it's not terribly clear what it's about. It says, a big thank you to the editor. The choice of the heading by your editor was so right for the occasion and most sensitive, narrated by General Sir Anthony Walker. The Winchester Fusion Choir musical director Mari O'Brien has passed on to her choir the wonderfully kind words from the many who attended that night. Can we thank Heather for the personal words of the fallen soldiers? Also, Nigel Bradshaw's professional choreography, Caroline Scott for her encouragement and reassurance, and St Bartholomew's Church for their generous refreshment, good wine and laughter after the event. Thanks to the Hyde 900 team. And that's from Rita Shaw in Otterbourne and Sheila North in Badger Farm.
And Dr. Catherine Paget writes, Doctor Concerns. I, along with many emergency medicine senior colleagues, including emergency medicine consultants from Southampton, co-signed a letter written by Dr. Rob Galloway, an A&E consultant from Brighton. I live in Winchester but work at Southampton University Hospital Trust in the emergency department, A&E, as a registrar. I have also worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital when I first qualified, and my concerns are as relevant to the RHCH as to the SUHT, that's the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the Southampton University County Hospital. I remain very worried that the possible imposition of junior doctor contracts will devastate emergency medicine by making a speciality that already has a recruitment and retention problem into a crisis. This will result in fewer specialist doctors to offer the service required in A&E departments throughout England. There are many flaws in the proposed junior doctor contract, but the key factor for emergency medicine is the reduction in pay for the significant out-of-hours work that we have to do to provide a proper 24/7 service. This will result in new trainees taking a pay cut of some 30%, despite working some of the most brutal shifts in hospital medicine. It is an amazing and rewarding speciality. I love my job, but am concerned in the future we will not be able to provide the service we want to and the people of Hampshire deserve. And that is from Dr. Catherine Paget, BM, BSc Hons, MRCEM.
And this is from Margaret Bloomfield, and it's heading here. Sir, on Monday, the 9th of November, I was about to get on the 12:06 p.m. Springvale bus when I fell and hit my head on the pavement. The young bus driver jumped off the bus, coming to my assistance, helped me onto the bus and phoned for an ambulance. He stayed with me until the paramedic arrived, making sure I was all right. I would like to say a very big thank you to this bus driver for the care and attention he gave me. This goes to show there are a lot of good people around. Margaret Bloomfield, Winchester.
And to change the tone, we're going back to the climate. The heading is Climate Alarmists. Earth's climate has been constantly changing, not just for millions of years, but for billions of years. Our planet has warmed and cooled very many times before the human species evolved. In spite of this well-documented evidence, Mr. Hutchinson, Letters, November the 19th, believes that the Earth's climate can be stabilised, his words, simply by not burning more fossil fuels. He also states that investing in fossil fuels is highly risky and ethically unsound. If he and his fellow global warming alarmists really wish to stabilise our climate, they will need to develop skills to eliminate changes in solar activity, to control changes in the Earth's orbit, to neutralise the oscillations in our planet's ocean currents, to prevent the catastrophic volcanic eruptions, and in fact, control all other natural factors which affect climate change. I note that Mr. Hutchinson is soon to attend the Paris Climate Conference. According to the United Nations website, the conference will be attended by 10,000 government representatives from over 190 countries, as well as 14,000 observers and 3,000 media people. I wonder how much fossil fuel will be consumed by these 27,000 people when travelling from all over the world to and from Paris. In fact, fossil fuels might not seem too risky an investment after all. That's from Rolihan, Colden Common.
And under a similar theme from Jock MacDonald, Voter Let Down. The other day, a friend of mine told me about a meeting he had with our local MP, Steve Brine. My friend was rightly proud of the solar panels he had put on the roof of his house. Somehow the MP heard about these panels and wanted to see them. He duly appeared, took the photo opportunity, and the result was published in the Conservative election leaflet. Not surprisingly, this friend was very annoyed when Steve Brine failed, like David Cameron, to live up to his green credentials. He had voted for Steve in the general election, but he won't ever again. The protestations of Amber Rudd and Cameron's emissary at the Treasury move him not at all, since my friend knows a thing or two about business and economics. Why must we have, in Winchester, MPs without principles and values any wider than those they think will keep them elected and thus able to climb the greasy pole to prominence? Mark Oden was just as bad as Steve Brine. Even at the local level, there is a need for good, honest leadership. Finally, this friend of mine welcomed the rise of Jeremy Corbyn, not because he will vote for him, nor for the possibility that Corbyn might make Labour unelectable, but because of his freshness of thought. Corbyn has, after all, got a raft of famous Nobel Prize-winning economists in his team of advisers, like Paul Krugman, Anne Pettifer and Thomas Piketty. They will make a change from the now discredited neoliberals who've been calling the shots for the last 35 years. And that was from Jock MacDonald of Winchester.
And that is the end of the letters for this week. Thank you to all of our contributors. Now it's time for your say. Following the Paris attacks and a debate on whether Britain should bomb Syria, we asked readers if Britain should be intervening with the Middle East. Noel has the answers.
Yes, from four men. Jim Branley, 92, from Coldon Common, said, I feel we should take part, but we have America and Russia bombing Syria, and I think it would do the job if all countries worked together. We should do something. And Tom Pumphrey, 19, a shop assistant from St Thomas's Street in Winchester, said, given what happened in Libya, it does not seem like there has been any advancement by Western countries to get a political settlement. Armed intervention could open a can of worms. And Kev Taylor, 27, assistant manager at the Crown and Anchor in Winchester from Badger Farm in Winchester, said, I don't know. I do not have a massive opinion on it. I think people who know what they're doing should make a decision. It's a tough one to call. And finally, Bruce Stone, who's 68, from Christchurch Road in Lower Stanmore, said, we should intervene. The news is that France want David Cameron to help, and as a member of the EU, we should support neighbouring countries.
Now we're going back to the mists of time for our historical news items from our files, and we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right. 25 years ago, November 23rd, 1990, and this is in two sections, this piece. Thatcher resigns. A major player leaves the world stage. That was the comment of Winchester's MP, Mr. John Brown, leading the widely varying reactions of politicians and people to the shock statement of the Prime Minister's resignation yesterday morning. Mr. Brown, always an ardent admirer of Mrs. Thatcher, said her resignation was a tragedy for Britain and the Western Alliance. It's a victory for embittered self-interest and ambition over loyalty, patriotism and good sense, he commented moments after the sensational announcement. And the second section of this report is headed Pigeon Pollution. The problem of pigeons fouling Winchester's streets and buildings has prompted city councillors to discuss measures to contain the escalating numbers. Despite their popularity with tourists and children, the birds are causing an expensive headache, from damaged property and contaminated foodstuffs to the spread of disease. Pigeons feed from various sites, including town centres, rubbish tips, and outside fast food premises. Diseases, including salmonellosis and tuberculosis, are becoming more common. A report before the Health and Works Committee on Monday stated that Winchester suffered from pigeon pollution.
Let's go back 50 years ago, please, Noel.
Yes, two items from November 27th, 1965. The first one is headed Bid to Beat Snobbery. A plan to rid Hampshire of the snobbery of the 11-plus and the grammar and secondary school system is to be prepared by the County Education Officer, Mr. R.M. Marsh, and his staff. Members of the Hampshire County Council were told at Winchester on Monday that local education authorities had been asked by the Minister of Education to prepare and submit a general statement of their long-term proposals for the establishment of comprehensive schools, together with a detailed statement of their proposals covering a period of 3 years, beginning not later than September 1967. And the second item is headlined Rhodesia Concerns. Marked concern over the Rhodesian situation was very much in the minds of the people who attended a New Forest Conservatives meeting at Milford-on-Sea on Friday of last week to hear Sir Oliver Crosthwaite Eyre discussing the situation. Sir Oliver said, "I find it extremely difficult to believe Harold Wilson really wanted the negotiations he undertook to succeed." While condemning UDI, Sir Oliver explained his own position concerning sanctions. He had already said that he would resign rather than support punitive sanctions in answer to a question at another public meeting.
Now, Jane's going to take us back 100 years.
And 100 years ago, two little wartime articles from November the 27th, 1915. Firstly, hopes for new peace. The veil of anxiety and suspense regarding the relationship of the Entente powers with Greece has happily been lifted, and Lord Kitchener, who was entrusted with the mission to Greece, has achieved a masterstroke of diplomatic understanding, and one that will make Greece the friend of the Entente powers until at least peace has been restored again throughout Europe. The prospect of Russian help being speedily forthcoming, the improved state of things in Serbia, thanks to the cooperation of the French and British troops, and the promise of Italy to send 40,000 troops to assist in restoring freedom to Serbia, all point to the ultimate success of the Allied forces in the Balkans. And secondly, recruits encouraged. Sir, I regret that the number of recruits coming from the city is unsatisfactory. I understand one reason for this is that young men are being dissuaded by their employers from joining, and I gather from the number of cases which have been before me during the past few days that there is considerable misapprehension among employers about the real position of affairs. Every person of military age should be allowed and encouraged to enlist without delay under the group system, which means he will not be summoned to the colours until his age class is called up. Alfred Edmeads, Mayor, Abbey House, Winchester.
Finally, Shirley's taken us back 200 years.
Right, and that was November 27th, 1815. Brimstone poisoning. A circumstance of the most alarming nature occurred at the house of Mr. Banks, farmer of Barham, near Stamford. On the night of Thursday in the evening, soon after the servants had gone to bed, one of the men was taken violently ill, and the other servants in a short time were affected in a similar way. It came out that in consequence of the appearance of an unpleasant disorder amongst them, they had resolved to take a portion of brimstone. The shepherd then produced what appeared to be sulphur, but was, in fact, fly powder, arsenicated brimstone, of which he, with the rest, took about half an ounce. A medical man was sent for, and all the servants were saved. And the second part of this is headed Lightkeeper in Rescue. A middle-aged woman, while gathering samphire on Thursday week, fell down some high rocks at the back of Holyhead Mountain, in which she had her thigh dislocated and an arm and two ribs broken. She lay upwards of 4 hours without her cries reaching the ears of anyone. At sunset, when she, through loss of blood, was about to let go her hold, she was heard by Hugh Griffiths, one of the lightkeepers of the lighthouse, who immediately descended down the precipice and dragged her to the top.
And we're back... Excuse me. We're back to the present. And first person this week is by George Hayter, and it's read by Noel.
His headline is A Safe Change of Mind. The frustration is enough to make you want to write to the Hampshire County Council, which sets the speed limits. Everybody seems to agree they've made some speed limits too low. When it's 30, everyone seems to go 35 or 40. That contempt for speed limits makes a fool of the law. I know we're only talking traffic regulations, but nevertheless, there's something unhealthy about citizens getting into the habit of flouting laws. policing in Britain is by consent, which depends on the rules being acceptable to most people. To reflect that requirement, the county is supposed to introduce only speed limits which the police think they can enforce without causing widespread public resentment. But I can think of plenty places where speed limits are resented, at least by drivers. One of those places is on the road from Winchester to Romsey. I can remember when Ampfield, 10 miles along this A3090 route from the Westgate, had no speed limit, apart from the national limit, of course. Most motorists were fairly compliant when a 40 limit was imposed, but a few years ago that was reduced to 30. The A3090 at Ampfield was once the trunk route from Bournemouth to London, and back then it was upgraded for speed, with generous width and no sharp bends. Driving through Ampfield on such a road at just 30 miles an hour feels faintly ridiculous. Staying under 30 needs concentration. If you manage it, you soon find a queue assembling behind you. With a weight of impatient cars, lorries and vans in your rear-view mirror, it takes an iron will not to join them in their transgression. Often speed limits are imposed largely to placate residents living next to the road. Householders press councillors to do something about traffic noise and danger. But sometimes it's just a minority of residents who really want a speed limit lowered. The rest of them just sign the petition to keep the petitioner happy. Signing is the easiest way to get rid of campaigners at your door. A common sight in such places is wheelie bins on the pavement, each one with a sticker urging drivers to slow down. Some of us have witnessed a car pulling out from a drive beside one of those bins. As we have been driving along, the emerging vehicle has accelerated away from us, exceeding the speed limit. I don't claim to have seen such hypocrisy in Ampfield, but I think such a case can be made for upping the limit there back to 40. Admittedly, road accidents are more common at junctions than away from them, and the A3090 does intersect with some side roads as it passes through Ampfield. And it is true that one of those junctions in the village is dangerously near the brow of a hill. I admit, too, that many people do live along the A3090 in Ampfield, and yes, from time to time there will be cars reversing out onto the main road. Well, OK, I have to concede that a new housing estate is being built by the village hall, so more families will soon be trying to turn from the estate and into the flow of cars and lorries. And yes, fair point, there is a lovely pub with a big car park and a busy restaurant opposite. You're absolutely right, yes, there is a church too, and a golf course, as well as the village hall, all generating traffic which turns on and off the 3090. Something else? Well, yes, I have to admit there's also a primary school seeking refuge behind a crash barrier on the outside of a bend on the A3090. Children are taken to and from the school by car, using an intersection on the bend in rush hour traffic and in good visibility and bad. Perhaps those county council speed limit people aren't quite so daft after all.
And now it's time for Belgarum Comment. Over to you, Jane.
And Belgarum is an alternative look at the news. And this week he's marvelling at comic book art. With the upcoming blockbuster just weeks away, Star Wars fans should head down to the Canvas Gallery for a special surprise. Made in collaboration with the Marvel creator Stan Lee, the unique pieces being displayed at the gallery on the High Street have arrived in the city near perfectly timed with the release of The Force Awakens. Each piece is signed by Mr. Lee, 92. As a result, prices start from just £695. Owner of the gallery, Chris Mobile, 42, from Poole, is enjoying life in Winchester after opening the shop just 3 weeks ago. He said the artwork was a real coup for the shop. Having all the pieces all signed by Stan Lee is a great thing for us. He may not march on too much longer. Without him, there would not be this massive collection of Marvel characters coming out of every cinema and TV, and now art galleries, he added. And with this, there's a picture of, I think it looks as if it's the window, with six Star Wars signed posters on display for people to purchase.
And that was Belgarum Diary. We've got editorial comment read by Shirley.
Right. With the plethora of Christmas television adverts already cramming our screens and the attractive window displays enticing shoppers in to buy their gifts, the meaning of Christmas can sometimes all too easily be forgotten. Ensuring those less fortunate have something to celebrate at this time of year is the reason why we are once again calling on our readers to support the Hampshire Chronicle toy appeal. Just one extra gift in your basket will make that happen for scores of youngsters across our community. See page 9 for how you can donate.
Now here's what's on for the beginning of December. Excuse me. Wednesday the 2nd of December, there's an event called So This Is Christmas, and it's at 7:45 p.m. at the Anvil Theatre, Basingstoke. Further details and tickets, box office is 01256 844 244. On Friday the 4th of December, at 7:45 p.m. in the Chesil Theatre, Bond is Back, a James Bond-themed evening in aid of the Chesil Theatre Development Appeal. And for further details, you can go to the box office, which is 07527, or www.cheseltheatre.co.uk. On Saturday the 5th of December, there's a winter fair from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the St Lawrence Church in the Square. On the 8th of December to Sunday the 3rd of January, it's the Theatre Royal Pantomime, and this year it's Jack and the Beanstalk. For tickets, please phone 01962 840 440. On Friday the 11th of December, the Cathedral Christmas Carol Concert is at 7 p.m. On Saturday the 12th of December, the Cathedral Chamber Choir Concert is at 1 p.m. And also the carol services at the Cathedral on Monday the 21st and Tuesday the 22nd of December at 6:30 p.m. For further details for the Cathedral, please go to www.winchester-cathedral-org.uk, or their box office is 01962 857 275. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 27th of November at 7:40 a.m. and begins at 4:05 p.m. And on Wednesday the 2nd of December, it ends at 7:47 a.m. and begins at 4:01 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Now we'll continue with further items of general news, starting with a piece read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is Major Feedback on Library Plans. Thousands of people have responded to proposals which could lead to the closure of several Hampshire libraries. The mobile service and some lesser used libraries could shut as part of a major review by Hampshire County Council as it bids to save £1.7 million. More than 5,700 comments have been left after 3 weeks of consultation on plans to split libraries into four tiers based on use. Some Tier 3 libraries, Bishops Waltham, Alsford and Fair Oak, may close or become volunteer-run. Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Councillor Andrew Gibson, stressed the consultation was only on the tier system, with any specific proposals, including closures, to be discussed separately. He said, "We're very pleased that the consultation on our draft library strategy has sparked such strong interest, and we're encouraging more people to have their say. All feedback is valuable and will be used to inform the final outcome, as no decisions have been made yet. At the moment, we are simply asking residents how libraries should be categorised and what the criteria should be to help inform any future reviews. We would consult about specific proposals before any changes were made." As previously reported, the county has targeted the mobile library service because it is used by an ageing population of 2,230 people, 1% of Hampshire's library users. Modern alternatives, such as e-readers, community exchanges, or a home library service, could be installed from 2017. Councillor Gibson added, nationally, the public sector faces considerable financial challenges with less money coming from central government. Hampshire is no different. With the County Council's grant having been more than halved in recent years, this has affected budgets for all services, including libraries, and we are looking at estimated savings to the library service of £1.7 million by 2020. Sean Cannon from the regional branch of the Anti-Austerity People's Assembly urged more library users to take the survey. There are 200,000 people who use the service and there's 6 million visits to Hampshire libraries, so 5,700 is not a huge sample in my opinion, he said. I think you have to read the consultation documents carefully because there's so much spin in them. The first thing I noticed when I got my copy was all this language about re-providing. I'm not sure that's even a word. The county is looking to reinvest £500,000 from the £2 million book fund into technology such as self-service borrowing, which Councillor Gibson said would make libraries modern and vibrant. The book fund would be cut from 2020. The consultation runs until January the 16th.
And here we have the letter from Steve Brine, MP. We said at the election in May this government will be about security, economic and national. This week in Parliament it has been about both. On Monday we had first sight of the Strategic Defence and Security Review, that is the SDSR, as outlined by the Prime Minister. The SDSR is a comprehensive blueprint that sets out how we harness all the tools of national power, and it rightly makes clear we cannot choose between conventional defences against state-based threats and the need to counter threats that do not recognise national borders. It prioritises the need to deter state-based activity, tackle terrorism, remain a world leader in cybersecurity, and ensure we have the capability to respond rapidly to crises as they emerge. As I said in the House of Commons this week, I welcome the UK's commitment to spending 2% of our GDP on defence and 0.7% on international aid. We remain the only major country in the world today to do that, and both are only possible because we have a strong and growing economy. I think the significant defence interests we have locally, not to mention the people who rely on it for their livelihoods, will welcome much of the SDSR. Portsmouth will have a very strong future, for instance, not least as the Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier will be based there. These are incredibly serious times, and the decisions we MPs will likely have to take in the next few weeks are among the toughest we face. They weigh heavy indeed, and I am grateful to the many constituents who have already been in touch to give me their opinion on possible military action in Syria. I know there will be more to come. My approach will be careful and measured, as always, and I will want to study the full spectrum approach as the government makes the case for Britain to join our international allies in going after IS at its headquarters in Syria, not just Iraq. In particular, I want to know how such action will be one element of a comprehensive and long-term strategy to defeat IS, in parallel with a major international effort to bring an end to the war in Syria. I would urge all constituents to study carefully the statement from David Cameron as presented in Parliament today.
Jobs fears over plans for homes. Hundreds of jobs could leave Alresford if a controversial housing plan is approved, councillors have warned. The Dean Industrial Estate is set to be redeveloped for housing under the Sun Lane scheme. But town chiefs are taking on Winchester City Council to avert what they fear could be significant job losses. The majority of town councillors agreed that the plan was unsound because of the risk to jobs. Two major firms told the Chronicle they are uncertain about moving to a new employment zone. the 312 jobs on site could move out of town if businesses do not move to Sun Lane, Alresford Town Council Chairman Lisa Griffiths told a packed meeting last week. There's a real risk we will lose jobs from Alresford because businesses will not relocate, said Councillor Sam Carr Smiley, a prominent critic of the scheme. It is the latest twist in a row over the City Council's local plan part two, which would see hundreds of homes built in Alresford. As reported by the Chronicle, residents are divided between the proposed plan, putting the bulk of housing on farmland on Sun Lane, and an alternative which spreads development out. However, the alternative plan has been dismissed by the City Council as unviable. The plan for Sun Lane would also see part of the Dean transformed into 75 houses. The meeting heard the Dean accounted for a third of Alresford's jobs. One resident said, "The biggest employer has 100 people working there, and they intend to double that, and they said they would rather move out. That would be a massive loss to the town." Councillors agreed to challenge the plan on the grounds it would lead to job losses. A spokesperson for the Alresford Chamber of Commerce said, "We recognise that there is a potential to lose manufacturing jobs to another location outside of Alresford. However, the Alresford Chamber of Commerce wouldn't want to see the diversity of the business community get diluted. Local Plan Part 2 will be submitted to the government in March. If approved, the plan will be adopted in November 2016.
Great outdoor nursery experience wins award. It is at the heart of everything they do, and now they have been awarded for their efforts by the Winchester Business Excellence Awards. Farley Nursery Schools were presented with the Wilkins Kennedy Excellence in Innovation Award earlier this year. Set up in 2005, they are a group of three outdoor nursery schools that uses a different approach to teaching young children, using the outdoors to give a more traditional education. The most recent nursery in Sparsholt opened last September and has yurt huts instead of classrooms. Starting out with just 10 children, the nursery now boasts around 170 pupils. Founder Susan Palmer, 51, of Nether Wallop, wanted to open an outdoor nursery based on the Scandinavian approach to early years education. She said, "Everything we do is outside. We are out there 90% of the time, come wind or rain. For us to win the award, it shows that we are thinking outside the box, as we do things differently here. We're not a standard nursery. It just reflects that people realise that we're doing something different and people realise that we do it well. The parents really do love it as well, and that is shown by how much we have grown." When she started the business, Susan's dream was to bring back many traditions that she thought was lost in today's schools. These include a proper nativity performance and a dad's breakfast every Father's Day. As well as this, there is a sports day to round off the year and the Farley Festival, which is held every 2 years. We invite all parents to come with their children and camp out in the field, enjoy delicious food al fresco and dance the night away to a lively band. The company is also looking to expand with a centre in Winchester and is looking to acquire more land to fulfil that dream. And there's a big picture of, described as yurts, but they look like two rather medium-sized marquees, very cosy, and some children with their parents or workers outside. And then there's a picture of Sue Palmer herself, smiling broadly, evidently very successful.
And here we have brave youngsters saved son's life during dog attack. The family of an Otterbourne schoolboy attacked by two dogs have thanked the teenagers who say they saved their son's life. Adil Sharduri suffered serious injuries after two Rottweilers pinned him to the floor and bit him as he was walking home from school near Boyett Lane. but it was thanks to Harry Redsall and William Hunter, both 13 and pupils at Thorndon School, that Adil's injuries were not more severe. Shouting and waving their arms at the dogs, they forced the Rottweilers off the terrified 12-year-old in Otterbourne. Adil's family have spoken of their gratitude to the two young heroes. Adil's mother, Fadusi Shadiuri, said, "Those dogs could have just turned on those boys, but they were so brave. We want to say thank you. They have saved my son's life." The dogs had really dug into Adil, and they could have shredded him if it wasn't for them. They did not even think about the risk to themselves. It was almost like instinct. It's just amazing what they have done. Harry said, "Me and William were just walking home like normal, and we took a shortcut through a field. We saw the two dogs and we saw a year eight boy and looked back, and I thought at first they were just playing with the dogs. Then one of them started screaming, and me and William went over there and shouted at the dogs, and they got off of him." William added, "At the time we weren't scared. We didn't have time to think. When he was on the floor, he'd been really pulled apart by the dogs, and when he got into the ambulance, it looked like we could see the bone in his leg. One of Adil's friends called an ambulance, and the boys waited with him until it came with concerned neighbours who had arrived to help." Harry said, "It was just one of those things. You don't really think about it, you just do it." Jane Rudsell, Harry's mother, said, "Me and my husband are very proud of him. It takes a lot of guts to do what they did. He would help anybody who needs help, and I'm glad he reacted the way he did." Jackie Hunter, 48, said, "William did not realise how brave he was. We're extremely proud of him. He didn't think about himself. He just acted on impulse to save that little boy." Mrs. Hunter, a community nurse sister, added, "If they had not done that, it could have ended very differently." Sue Whelan, the associate head at Thorndon School, said, "We have been inundated with calls and loads of positive comments, and we are very proud of them." And this is accompanied by a photo of the 12-year-old Adil, who had been attacked by the dogs, looking very relieved and pleased. And also of the two young lads, William Hunter and Harry Rudsell, with their arms around each other, smiling broadly at Thorndon School.
Tributes to incredible Elsie. Tributes have been paid to Elsie Truscott, who was once one of the well-known faces at the Hampshire Chronicle. Elsie worked for the paper in the 60s, 70s and 80s, where she ran accounts for business advertising. Elsie, who was better known then as Elsie Gulliver, often worked at the front office at the former Chronicle office in Winchester High Street. She also covered the Eastleigh Daily Echo office. Elsie joined the Chronicle in 1965 and worked there until 1970. She rejoined in 1973 and retired in 1983. As well as being an integral part of the team at work, she was an important member of the social group at the paper. During her time at the paper, she organised activities, including the annual float in the Winchester Carnival. During the Second World War, she joined the Women's Land Army and then volunteered for the First Women's Timber Corps and became a lumberjack. She was also a lifelong member of the Labour Party and was a trade union member. Before her death in October, Elsie was living in Albrook near Eastleigh. She passed away at Grange Nursing Home in Southampton, with family members by her side. Her daughter, Penny Gulliver, said her mother lived her life according to her values. She said, "Elsie spent her life standing up for other people, and she will be remembered and missed by many more than just her family and friends. She was a woman with great integrity and lived her life committed to the values of love, peace and justice."
Pedestrians call for better safety. Pedestrians are demanding more should be done to protect their safety after a popular shortcut was fenced off as part of a major redevelopment in Winchester. Hampshire Police's West Hill base in Romsey Road has been fenced off as work starts to turn it into a large housing estate. Pedestrians who used to walk through the site as a shortcut say they must now use narrow pavements running alongside Romsey Road, and they claim traffic is being held up by passing points also being sealed off. Barclay Homes is planning a 200-home estate on the site, previously used as a pedestrian cut-through for Winchester's hospital, prison and university. Private security have been hired to guard the area, which Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes said was for resident safety. Following complaints, he has now pledged to remove the barriers from passing points on narrow roads around the site, which locals say have added to congestion. But he said the pavement issues was a matter for the Highways Department of the local authority. Mr. Hayes said the issues residents have raised highlights the need for the Highways Department to address narrow pavements and the lack of dropped curbs. One resident who uses the wheelchair to travel to cancer appointments at Royal Hampshire County Hospital fears the lack of dropped curb would put her at risk. The woman, who asked not to be named, said, "It's very inconsiderate. I hadn't heard a thing about this until we came round here and they had blocked off the whole site." Ward councillor and nearby resident Liz Hutchinson said, "There's no suggestion in the proposals as to how Romsey Road is going to be addressed, and it needs to be redesigned from the point of view of pedestrians and so cyclists to make the whole place a safe and pleasant environment." Councillor Sean Woodward, executive member for Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, said, "As the Highways Authority, we will always seek opportunities to improve facilities for pedestrians when sites come forward for redevelopment. We'll work closely with Winchester City Council as the planning authority to ensure that appropriate contributions are made by the developer to mitigate the impact of the development and help improve facilities for everyone."
And now new surgery plans. Residents in Winchester had a chance to have a first look at fresh plans for a new GP practice. St Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street is set to relocate as part of the £150 million Silver Hill development before the old site is bulldozed. Dozens of residents had a look at the proposal on show at Winchester Guildhall. It is understood that there will be a new planning application for the building on the corner of Upper Brook Street and Friars Gate in December. Permission for the GP practice was originally given but had expired. Building work could start in 2016. Many residents who viewed the plans were happy with the new look building and said it was desperately needed. Philip Conway, who uses the surgery, said, "I've been a patient for 37 years. I would like to see the new surgery built. The current building is so inadequate, and I think they've been brave to hold on for so long until the building has been built. It must be done. It is desperately needed." One resident, who asked not to be named, but who has been a patient at the surgery since 1971, told the Chronicle, "It is about time they did it. It's desperately needed. I hope the new building will speed up the process of being seen by doctors." Another resident, who again did not want to be named, said, "It will be very nice when it's finished, but I think it will be a long time until that happens. Winchester has a terminal delay of getting anything done, and planning takes ages." It comes after the Winchester Deserves Better campaign against Silver Hill is backing a petition urging the council to separate the surgery from the Silver Hill project because patients claim they are being put at risk by tying the plans to the revamp of flats and shops. The petition was presented in November. And this is accompanied by a proposed photograph of the new development, which is a large surgery, saying St Clement's Surgery, very modern and easy to find on the corner of two roads in the middle of Winchester, which got a thumbs up from the patients.
Donors are honoured by their families at a special ceremony. Families honoured loved ones who donated their organs to save a stranger's life at a special ceremony in Winchester. The Order of St John Award for Organ Donation recognised 12 families who have had a relative selflessly donate an organ to improve someone else's well-being. Across the UK, the Order of St John group honoured the lives of the 1,282 people who donated their organs after death leading to thousands of patients' lives being saved or transformed. Chair of the Hampshire County Group, Tim Wheel, presented the families with their awards. Mr. Wheel said it is important the lives of those who donate is regularly acknowledged. He said, with approximately as many as three people dying every day due to the shortage of organs for transplant, these donors and their families have carried out an inspirational act.
Care company to open new facility. A new residential and respite care home is set to open next month in Chandler's Ford. Brendan Care's latest facility for the elderly is Dame Sheila Court at Valley Park. Dame Sheila Court is at Brendan Care's Knightwood site off the junction of Knightwood Road and Shannon Way, and the development consists of 20 rooms. Every room has a private terrace with access into the gardens. The new residential and care home has been created by refurbishing the lower floor of the original building, and it will be taking residents from Tuesday, December the 1st. An open day will be held on Friday, December the 4th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. for anyone looking for residential or care or respite care accommodation. Brendan Care Chief Executive Carol Sawyers said, "We're delighted to be opening Dame Sheila Court, residential and respite home at Brendan Care Knightwood."
And here we have Views Are Wanted on Sports Site. Winchester Civic Chiefs are sounding out the public on an ambitious plans for a multi-million sports centre on the edge of the city. The City Council is currently considering two ways of tackling the deteriorating River Park Leisure Centre. One is to refurbish on the current site in Hyde. The other is to build a new centre on land at Bar End. The new centre would be in partnership with the University and the County Council. Steve Tilbury, Corporate Director, said the Council was engaging with people living in the Bar End Highcliffe areas. He said, "We are looking to understand what the issues of importance are for local people if a major facility was to be located there. Not whether there should be a 25 or a 50 metre pool, but issues like car parking, access, noise and lighting. What are the issues we need to take into account?" Mr. Tilbury said such an ambitious plan would need consensus support, and that may be difficult if local people were strongly opposed. Campaigners are pressing the council to build the large centre with 50-metre pool, five synthetic pitches and a 350-space car park at Bar End. Emma Back of the Sports, Arts and Leisure Trust told the town forum that it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that the council cannot afford to miss. The suggested site is the artificial pitch next to the athletics track and does not include Tesco-owned King George V Field, said Mr. Tilbury. The council has offered to buy it, but the price depends on the use. A decision on what sort of centre to build could be made next autumn.
Youngsters campaign to stomp out the bullies. A Winchester school stomped out the bullies when it took part in an anti-bullying campaign. Osselbury Primary School took to the playground on Friday for a 20-second stomp to raise awareness of the issue. The school started their anti-bullying week with an assembly on bullying and what it means, with the children making posters about the importance of speaking out against it. Head teacher Wendy Smith wanted all the children to be aware of the importance of understanding what bullying is. She said, "We are pleased to be a part of the Anti-Bullying Alliance and instill an awareness of what bullying means and how the children should act if they or others are affected by bullying. We hope this will serve as a reminder for them as they grow into young adults how they should treat others and be treated." The campaign, led by the Anti-Bullying Alliance, started over 10 years ago to raise the profile of the issue of bullying.
Here's information about a priority service. Thousands of people could be missing out on a free essential service available during power cuts and emergencies. Scottish and Southern Energy Power Distribution, which runs the electricity network in central southern England, provides this free priority service for vulnerable customers. In the Hampshire area, there are 93,323 customers on its Priority Service Register, PSR. But given the size of Hampshire, bosses at SEPD feel there could be more people who are unaware of the service. Customers can qualify for the register if they are dependent on electricity for home medical care, have a chronic illness or short-term medical condition, are disabled, have special communication needs, have a young baby or receive a state pension. During a power cut, they will receive a phone call and a welfare check from the specially trained team. To register, contact SEPD on 0800 294 3259. 0800 294 3259. Though it could be a problem if they haven't got a mobile phone.
Now, man's ambition to make roads safe. A Hampshire man is behind a scheme aimed at making the county's roads safer. Former B&Q retail marketer Phil Palfrey is behind Project Pictogram, an initiative designed to help cut serious injuries and deaths in road crashes. The programme, which focuses on getting motorists to drive at appropriate speeds, not to use mobiles or eat and drink or take drugs while behind the wheel, has now put into practice by Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, HFRS. Local authorities, including Hampshire County Council, Southampton City Council and Portsmouth City Council, have all signed up to the scheme. Phil, who works at HFRS, is calling on all businesses to add stickers to the back of each of their vehicles, reminding drivers of the importance of leaving enough space between them and the vehicle in front. He said, "The initiative invites retail and distribution fleets to display 5 pictogram stickers on the backs of their lorries, vans, coaches, buses and company cars." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Phil Palfrey with the stickers that he suggests are stuck on the back of cars that would remind the drivers of the certain dangers involved.
Find your English identity at university's new centre. Winchester University has launched a new centre for national identity. All aspects of Englishness will be studied by Winchester University students under a programme combining politics, history, law, and even ICT under the flag of St George. Led by former Cabinet Minister and Southampton MP John Denham, the Centre for English Identity and Politics hopes to harness rising public belief in England and the opportunities presented by local devolution. The project was launched with a lecture by Robert Toombs, Professor of History at Cambridge University. Addressing an audience of around 100 students, he argued for a devolved state, rejecting declinist, resentful feeling. He said, "Our multicultural character is as much a part of our past as thatched cottages and cream teas." The centre, the first of its kind, will engage with local schools and communities to understand the forces shaping England, said the university's Vice Chancellor, Joy Carter. Performing arts students will produce works exploring Englishness, while events management students will organise an English Week. And with this article, we also have quite a nice coloured picture of John Denham and Professor Toombs standing together, smiling broadly.
New look at mental health. Students at a Winchester college have been using textiles to symbolise what mental health means to them. Upper sixth pupils at Peter Simmons College have created a number of designs which they have used to interpret the issue. The college has teamed up with the Southampton Neuroscience Group, part of the University of Southampton, to take a fresh look at mental health issues. Teachers have used this as a way for the students to find a creative inspiration for their final pieces for their course. Shema Qureshi, a postdoctoral research scientist from the Faculty of Medicine at the university, said, "The work the students are producing is fantastic. It offers us a completely different way to get people to discuss contentious issues such as mental health. The students have only been working on this project for a few weeks, but already they're coming up with some great ideas and designs. This joint project should help us in our objective of breaking down some of the myths and misconceptions and engaging with people about mental health in a non-threatening way." Becky Vale, textiles teacher at Peter Simmons, said, "This is a project where art meets the mind and brain diseases are being interpreted by artists through the tangible medium of textiles and art. The students' work will be displayed at the university as part of their public outreach events." And it's a very attractive picture of Shema Qureshi standing there looking very pretty in her black hijab, and a young student in a denim miniskirt and a black bomber jacket looking at a very abstract-looking piece of artwork.
And here we have Star Kickstarts festivities. A Saints player helped to kickstart a hotel's festive celebrations. Footballer James Ward-Prowse was at the Meon Valley Marriott Hotel and Country Club in Shedfield to flick the switch to light up its 14-foot Christmas tree outside the entrance. Prior to the switch-on, children from St John the Baptist Primary School in Waltham Chase had performed traditional carols, and James thanked them for their efforts by handing out bags of sweets. This was the culmination of a day of festive fundraising by the hotel, which was in aid of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. The hotel invited the community to its Christmas fair with 35 stalls and a Santa's grotto, and also raised further funds with a raffle. Children had the chance to see what it would be like to get behind the controls of a helicopter, thanks to the charity's helicopter pod. And there are two lovely photos, one of the Saint Star with the choir of St John the Baptist, all wearing Father Christmas hats or bright red reindeer headdresses and carrying their bags of sweets, and the other of the same star with Father Christmas and the elves.
Battle to restore Lollipop Man. Council chiefs have angered parents at a Winchester school by refusing to restore their crossing patrol despite an increase in traffic. Congestion outside Week Primary School has increased by 15% since 2011, or nearly 700 cars a day, according to a survey commissioned following a safety appeal. But Hampshire County Council has stood by its decision not to replace Lollipop Man Robin Pritchard. Campaign leader David Adams said, "If a child is seriously injured or killed as a result, it will be Hampshire County Council's fault. This is a terrible and frankly ridiculous situation. Their decision is illogical, ill-judged and dangerous." Mr. Adams took his campaign to the town forum last Wednesday. He said, "Every week there is a near miss. If the crossing is unsupervised, I fear it is only a matter of time before a child is injured or killed." But transport chiefs say the existing zebra crossing in Stony Lane will address the same safety concerns as a school crossing patrol. And in an email to campaigner James McQuott, traffic and safety manager Mark Samways said, "Having carefully assessed the location and how pedestrians are crossing the road, we believe that the zebra crossing provides a suitable and safe crossing facility for the school and wider community. Our decisions in respect of requests, whether for services like an SCP or new infrastructure, consider whether the facility is justified and whether providing it should be a priority compared with other demands on funding." Steve Brine, MP, and County Councillors Martin Todd and Jackie Porter have joined the battle amid cost-cutting reductions in patrol officers across Hampshire. Councillor Todd said, "The council has to get its act together on crossing patrols. When it's already taking too long to fill crossing patrol vacancies, it seems bonkers to deliberately create a new one in a week and then not replace it, particularly when the latest survey shows that there's more traffic there and it's going faster than it did 5 years ago when Week was last surveyed." Parent volunteers at Week, who have helped children cross the road since Mr. Pritchard's departure, are likely to stand down within the next few weeks because they're putting themselves at risk, Mr. Adams said. He added, "The council will have been warned repeatedly and they will have ignored their own research that confirmed the need for them to manage this risk. They have also told us not to worry because average traffic speeds are under 30 miles per hour, which would be a great comfort to anyone whose child is run over by a car going at 20 miles per hour, I'm sure." The forum heard calls for the forum to fund the £5,000 costs of the Stony Lane lollipop man. But Steve Tilbury, corporate director, said, if the city council funded one, then the county might prevail on it to fund others.
I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner, Hilary Nielsen and Linda Vincent. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Northrop Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory sticks back in the wallet with a laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.